I think that the best people don't just recognize their strengths, but also the strengths of the company they're walking into. The more experienced talent that you find, and usually the better people, they're able to contextualize their value to the company based on what the company is, what their skill set is, and like the circumstances.
How do you create an unshakable business? I crossed $100 million in net worth by the age of 28. Now I'm growing acquisition.com into a $1 billion portfolio. In this podcast, I share the lessons I've learned in scaling big businesses and helping our portfolio companies do the same. Buckle up and let's build.
It's definitely one of those things where I think, yeah, as you kind of continue to grow, you realize that the sort of cap or the lid to your success is like your own ability to like lead yourself and manage your own feelings, manage your mind, manage your, you know, your way of kind of, yeah, dealing with things, because there's going to be bad situations and bad things that come up and you just can't let it get you down for too long. You got to kind of bounce back.
I know, there's so many.
On your team side of things, like, you know, obviously as you've been scaling things out, you've been building an amazing team around you. You have like 10 people you mentioned that report to you. What are sort of the key traits that you're looking for in these people? And out of like, when you think of maybe a couple of the kind of star performers on the team, what's like the stuff that you're like, these are the kind of traits that I didn't know about maybe when I was starting, but these are the things that like I need to be looking for. Like I know on my side, something that we've recently kind of characterized as like producer energy. People that just like, they always figure out a way. Not the kind of people that come back to you and need to check in or get your opinion on things. Generally, like you can just give them some ambiguous task and they're going to just find a way to get that thing done. And we just call it producer energy. And we kind of look to hire for that now. I'm curious on your side, if there's any traits you've seen.
I would say that, you know, I try to reflect the traits in our values. So I'll kind of break down what I think the values, I would say like the traits that compile them. Like one that I would say for me, that's really important is I call it competitive greatness. And what I mean by that is, you know, when we first started this acquisition.com, it was from a place of, you know, are we going to invest in real estate? Are we going to just put our money in stocks? Are we just going to like, you know, just hang out for the next few years? Like, you know, go to Island. Like, we don't need to keep working. We can just live off what we've got. And it was like, dude, that's just like not in our blood. Like, that's not who I am. Like, I like the challenge. Like, I've been like that my whole life. And I truly enjoy it more than I don't enjoy it. And I was like, I only want to be surrounded by people like that. Like, I want people who are not just here for the money. Like, they're here because they are hungry for the challenge and the growth that comes with the position. And so I think that one of the most important things to me is that I hire people where I know that money is not the first thought. That's really important to me.
Yeah.
Because I don't think that they can, I mean, money's great, but it's not my first thought, which might be surprising, but it's not. I have to train myself to balance like the different sides, because sometimes I actually can think too little of it, which is probably sounds like bullshit, but like it's just been how I have been my whole life, probably how I was brought up. And so I want people who embodying personal excellence is their first thought. And then I think that the rest follows from there. And competitive greatness, in my opinion, is like the epitome of that. So that's the first thing I would look for. I think the second thing is that I do want people who are receptive to feedback. I think people who can, and this is something I think I'm actually good at. And so people might think, oh, you're saying that because you're their boss. But no, I think I'm actually really good at this, which is like when I have been made aware of something that I could do differently that would have a better result, I will change on a dime. Mm-hmm. I am able to quickly change my behavior. And I actually would say that that is a measure of intelligence. How quickly can we change our behavior once we realize that it is adverse to our goals?
Yeah.
And so I look for people who can quickly change behavior because I think that sometimes there's nothing harder, you probably know this, than working with people and having to time and time again. And, you know, I can help them more, but like, do I have the time to coach Sally every day, every week on this thing?
Or worse than that, like you feel like you need to sugarcoat stuff because they take it personally or something when you're trying to just be open with them about just some standard stuff that we just need to get better at.
Exactly. People who feedback is normalized and welcome. Mm-hmm. And I think we have a great culture of that where people can casually ask for feedback and it can be a conversation even at a lunch table with us. You know what I mean? Which is really cool. And then I would say the last one is industriousness. Like I say this and oh God, I've had so many videos, but being able to work really hard on the right things. Mm. And there's not one, like actually, there's not one person on our team who would not work nights and weekends to get something done. I mean, there's only like 30 people. Like, I am sure of it. I've seen them all do it and not brag about it, not have to like whatever. They will be rewarded for it. Like, people will shout them out. People will give them kudos. We'll like send them something, you know, like it's not like it goes unnoticed, but they don't do it because of that. They do it because that's who they are. And I think, you know, people who are, I like to say like, this is like actually what I'm like down mother. Yeah. Like, they're just a down mother. Like, that's what I want, you know, because I'm a down mother. I'm like, what do we got to do? I'm like, let's do it.
Yeah.
Let's go. You know what I mean? And like, almost like take the stuff that many might complain about and turn it into something that's like a really cool challenge we get to go through together.
Yeah. Yeah. I say like, if I'm running a team and it feels right, it should feel almost like a sports team.
Yeah.
And that we're just playing a game together versus like anyone being too sensitive around anything. It's like, if you're playing basketball and someone missed an alley-oop, you just call them out. Like, who cares?
Yeah, right.
Like, no one's taking it personally. It's like, you f***ed up. Let's just be real and let's get back out and like keep crushing. Let's not get hung up on like a bit of feedback or, and let's just like be comfortable with just like, we're all going to make mistakes, but we're going to be forthright when it happens. And inevitably, let's just operate like a meritocracy and just get better because of it and change our minds if there's a better idea that didn't come from us, you know? And that should just be standard, but I feel like we live in a lot of, there's a lot of soft people out there.
And I know.
A lot of easy, you know, it becomes easy, I think. If you don't hire right, you start allowing a little bit of that to seep in your company. And I've been guilty of that in the past. And then you're just like, oh my God, what kind of culture am I running right now?
Yeah, then you don't want to be in your own company.
Oh no, it's the worst. You've basically built a prison.
Yeah.
I had that a decade ago in something I built. So
I did too.
Yeah.
It's it's the worst feeling
on your
world.
Side, like, how are you testing people for something like competitive greatness? Because we all want to say, you know, we're just hiring great people in it. You know, but you make mistakes, especially early on in your career. You know, is there a couple things like, you know, I've learned over the years to, you know, put really like almost have like anti-interviews where I'm not going to give you challenges and things to do oftentimes that you're only going to do this stuff if you really want this job. And it can't be because of the money or nothing. Like, it may just be some inconvenient in a certain role
that
maybe requires that in like an operational role that if you can jump over these sort of things, then you're serious about what we're about to do. I'm curious on your side, how does that look like for you? What kind of stuff have you integrated into your recruitment, your hiring processes to screen for competitive greatness?
So that's definitely one. You know, I would say like even for like Jason is here because we did video editor tryouts and it was like...
You passed.
Right. And it was basically, we gave them footage and we gave them a very short time span that they had to meet the requirements and turn the footage in.
Nice.
And dude, it was crazy. Cause like, I think this was like a year and a half ago-ish. I think 1,000 people signed up for the tryouts. And then the ones who made it through and actually turned it in on time was like 48. And I was like, that's insane. You know what I mean? And so through a lot of different roles, like when they're roles that we can put those things into place. I think the harder ones for me are the higher level executives because it's much more strategic thinking thought work. Those I look for in the interview process throughout all their interviews, because I'll watch all of them. I listened for what they speak of from their prior roles and why they want to come here. So the best people, I've seen a pattern, which is that typically they are not able to maximize their potential in their current role. So it's not that they hate the job they're at. They're like, this is a great place. I have a great boss. I can't fully utilize my skill set here. And they recognize that the role at our company, they would be able to fully utilize their skill set. They would have more, which I think is where people, they get more reinforcement from that, right? Because if you're able to do all the things that you're best at, you feel great. Mm-hmm. You're getting to do all these things that you're like, I'm good at all of this. And I like all of it. And I have variety as well. And so I've noticed that as like the reason that they're leaving, it's never because the job is awful. It's because it does not maximize their skill set. The second is that, especially in a leadership role, they are walking away from money. So I have had multiple people where like they have a payout coming. It's coming in, you know, 3 or 4 months. They don't even ask, would you wait? They're like, at the end, when everything is said and done, they're like, just so you know, I really, really am excited for this job. I'm so excited that I just walked away from like a 7-figure payday. Hmm. So that tells me they're not short-term minded.
Yeah, they're all in.
Yeah, they're competitively great.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would say that the last piece is when they talk about in all the interviews what they're excited about, and you can sense the excitement, it's the people they're going to be around and the cause that we're going after being so big. And I think a common theme that I realize is that people are like, I want this to be my career making move. I want this to be my gym launch, my stamp, you know, to show like I'm a badass. So like none of it is about money, and they even sacrifice money to get the role.
Yeah.
That to me from a higher level is how I measure it. From the lower level, I think it's inconvenient tasks is a fantastic way.
No, it reminds me of the Jeff Bezos approach of just like hiring missionaries over mercenaries, right? Like people that are just down for the cause that, yeah, will quit, you know, a higher paying thing just to be around great people headed towards a great spot and are just committed to it. You know, those are the kind of people that, yeah, will go the distance in good times and in bad times versus ditch you in bad times because, you know, the financials don't look so good for a month or two or whatever it may be. And you need those people, like you said, that are just down
Yeah. And I think it's actually super common for us to encounter that because so many people, like they see acquisition.com and they come from like traditional private equity or consulting or whatever it might be. And I'm not going to pay what they pay over there. Like it makes no sense because especially like acquisition.com, like we get our own deal flow. A huge component of some of those giant companies is they're bringing in deals. And I'm like, okay, well, you don't source deals at all here. So why would I pay you $1 million a year? Right. And the right people recognize how much easier their jobs are because of the brand and because of the way the company is built as well, which I think is really important because I think that the best people don't just recognize their strengths, but also the strengths of the company they're walking into. And they can contextualize like what their value is because of that.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've noticed that, but it's like the more experienced talent that you find and usually the better people, they're able to contextualize their value to the company based on what the company is, what their skill set is, and like the circumstances.
Yeah. And ideally you're hiring people too with like a proven track record, maybe a proven track record building something bigger than what you've built so far. So you're kind of hoping that person can kind of repeat that playbook at your existing company. So you'd hope that they're able to kind of look at the machine and go, okay, I see where this is at. I'm going to put, you know, my playbook here, run my system there, and we're going to take this thing from this cute little operation you got right now to something amazing once I've kind of, you know, implemented my playbook.
Yeah.
Yeah. And can kind of see, obviously like the direction, the impact that's going to have, the ROI, and then know and kind of believe in that bigger vision to where it's headed.
Yeah. And I think specific playbooks for sure. But I think, I'm like, I have to make sure that we're on the right track, right?
Yeah. And so kind of shifting gears, you know, when you're looking at kind of acquiring this platform company over the next bit, when you look at, say, you know, a company, like what kind of revenue range are you thinking this company is going to be at that you'd go after?
It could be anywhere from 25 to 50.
And then what would be the playbook that you'd take for something like that to get it to like 200 million?
Oh gosh. Well, if it's brick and mortar, there's fairly simple ways to do it. The advantage that we have is that that's our like, where we have the most industry knowledge is brick and mortar. Mm-hmm. And that's something that it took us the last couple of years to realize. Goodness, there's a lot of things that you can do. God, they're so simple. So I would say that there's a few. One is you'd say, okay, how do I reach the organic, what we call is like the organic max for this business, which is like, if I take a business that's at 25 million and I want to get to 50, that's probably doable through, adding additional marketing channels, adding increasing lifetime value through additional products and upsells, expanding profit margin through renegotiating with vendors and getting on different platforms, buying a technology that we integrate into the company. Those are all things that we could do to get towards organic max. And then it's fairly rinse and repeat from there on out, which is like, okay, now that I have a platform company for these brick and mortars, I'm going to acquire nodes beneath them. And then that's how you expand to increase the size of the company, is that rather than starting these companies from within, you're just acquiring them. So like for us, for example, like an example of how this would work is like, if we wanted a platform for a med spa chain, then we would find somebody who has, say, anywhere 4 to 6 locations, because med spas are typically high in revenue, like anywhere between, they might be per location on the lower end, like 3 or 4 million, and on the higher end, like 8 million a year, 10 million a year, I've even seen per location. So say somebody has, let's just say 4 of them, and then they have a corporate team with a corporate headquarters, and they have quality control. They have head of CS. They have basically an executive team that oversees all these locations. Well, I go and buy that company. I improve it the best I can as its own entity. And then I say, cool, now we're just going to run the playbook, but we're just going to buy the locations to add on. You've got 4. Let's now our inbound flow. We get, you know, what is, I mean, maybe we get like 50 med spas a month that apply. Let's tell all of them, do you want to be part of this other company?
Right.
And then when we sell, eventually it will be more valuable for you because you'll be worth more because you get a higher multiple because there's more of them.
Right.
And so that's the expansion for brick and mortar. And then the advantage that we have that I think is the unique advantage is that our ability to recruit operators for locations. Hmm. So my plan is that once we get these platform companies, like one thing that we have a huge advantage at right now is our talent recruitment. Like our ability to get talent right now for our companies is like better than it's ever been for any of my own companies. And nice. It's because of the brand.
Right.
And it's not by like people applying on the site. It's by outbound. And so
Okay. So you're going and just reaching out to people and just kind of have like a talent list that you're going.
Yeah. After. So I look at our portfolio companies and then what are the roles that are open? Okay. What are the competitive companies that are ideal where I think I can get the best talent? And then people answer. It's not that the brand attracts that talent. It's that the brand allows people to open the door when we knock. And so finding the talent, I believe that a huge advantage to scaling the operations is that I would love to use like my brand to find operators, you know, and train and put through an operator training for these platform companies so that we can expand faster. Because if we look at the roll-ups that are done and then the current existing like chains, you could say, where people have like 10 to 20 locations, like what is the, I would say like point of failure? They're not good at recruiting talent at the pace they need to expand the company.
Right.
And that is what we have so many people on our talent list inbound. And we have tons of people out down there answering. It's like, what do I do with all this excess? And so it's like, I want to put it into something that becomes more valuable if I put it in. And so that's another way is that just our ability to recruit the talent for the companies needed. I think it's highly leveraged in that opportunity because it's not just that I'm bringing in teammates for them, but I'm bringing in operators who run locations. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Hey guys, if you already don't know by now, I am actually fairly active on LinkedIn. I may go so far as to say it's actually become my favorite platform. So if you'd like to connect with me, just send me a request or hit follow. And shout out those who've been sharing my posts and tagging others.
Yeah, I think that's the thing that people often overlook as you're building a brand. Like people think about, oh, it's going to be easier to raise investment, easier to close deals, more surface area for luck or building a community. And the often overlooked thing is your ability to go and actually attract talent.
Yeah.
And be able to open different doors there is like insane.
Inevitably, dude, I think that's like the number one thing.
The reality is that you can just bring in really smart people that know what they're doing. And if your brand, whether it's your personal brand, your business brand, can open up a lot of doors and bring them into an industry where maybe the talent's gotten a little stagnant overall, you can have a huge competitive advantage.
Oh, 100%. And I know it's hard though, because like for someone who's listening to this, that's never experienced that, it's not real and it's not valuable.
Right.
You know, to people who have larger businesses who have had a bad person, replace them with a great one and seen increase in revenue and profit, they're like, holy shit, it's the holy grail. And that's one piece that I haven't yet figured out how to get through to smaller businesses.
Yeah. I think sometimes it's also just like the cost of a bad hire. Like they may not understand all the time, like the benefit of a good hire. It's sort of maybe hard to imagine like someone that comes on board your business and transforms it seems almost too good to be true.
Yeah.
But I think all of us have felt the pain of like that person that comes in,
it's
screws
so
some things
wrong.
Up, runs some weird systems, upsets some clients. And you're like, wow, we are back, you know, 10
Square
months
one.
Of where we should have been, you know, and you can feel that and just go, at least if I could just find someone that just kept this ship rolling.
Yeah. Like,
we'd be a lot
change
better
anything.
Off. Totally. On your side, like as you've kind of, you know, when you think about getting from, you know, 100 million now to a bill, what are some like the core systems that you think that need to like evolve inside of your business, you know, to get to that level?
The number one right now, and that I foresee is data.
Data. Yeah. I've been feeling the same thing. Like I was talking to our team on some team meetings right now, and it's like dashboards, data, understanding full funnel tracking, like just the smarter you are, the better decisions you can make.
Yes. I think with everything, it's like data, reporting, and operational cadence. And I think if you upgrade your vision, you have to upgrade your operations. And that's the thing that consistently has to upgrade. I need to upgrade it now. I'm going to need to continue to upgrade it. I'll be honest, like IT and I would say like the IT side of things of like putting together dashboards, oh my God, I just hate it. Like if there's one thing that you know, but I'm always like, why would I do that? You know what I mean? But I don't even think I'm good at, I don't even think it's like an area where I'm super skilled in. I'm just good at picking the person, and that's pretty much it. Yeah. So I think that that is an area. The second area I would say, I just think it's going to be a cultural shift. I think that, I mean, I've seen it before in the business and I'll see it again, but with on a smaller scale because there's less people needed for acquisition.com to grow. I think that some people aren't going to like when we require more discipline of data reporting, operational cadence, transparency, documentation, because the job changes a lot for them. And I think that's it's a cultural shift and it's a hard one to make because for somebody who was there when that stuff wasn't needed, it just feels like you have now made their job harder. And unless you can properly articulate the benefit, direct benefit to them, not just the business, it's hard to keep people as engaged as you grow when it just feels like for them in their world, they just have more work to do that is less valuable, that gets them no reward. And that's something I feel is a challenge that I can take on and will think through. And I feel like I can come up with some creative ways to make it easier. But there's also just like the practicalities of like business is not perfect and some parts of it are going to be less fun than others. And so I think as any company goes from like, you know, anyone going from like 100 million to a billion, like there's just has to be a much higher level of discipline around some of those things. You know, but that's also why, like, I think the thought of being a public CEO to me sounds awful. There's a certain level where you're like, I'm good.
It seems like some unnecessary pain.
Yeah, exactly.
I was watching a recent video you had out and you were talking about the importance of like understanding different efficiency metrics. And one of them was your revenue per employee.
Yeah.
Is there any other kind of metrics you look at as, you know, how efficient your portfolio companies are?
I look at the correlation between their ability to complete their initiatives that they commit to and their growth as a company.
And so are those initiatives tracked like via like the OKRs and such? And like they set out these quarterly objectives or annual objectives and how many of those did they hit?
Call them whatever you want. Yeah. But I have noticed, well, there is a correlation between our companies that grow the fastest and have the best profit margins and those that hit their quarterly objectives.
Right.
And so we track that. So that is something that I pay a lot of close attention to. I would say that the next piece is quality of hire, which is a two-way fit, which is like 90 days in. Do they both agree this is the right fit? And I think our best companies are put a lot more emphasis on getting the right talent and playing their part in that. And I think that we have a huge hand in that with them, but the ones who succeed the most take initiative there, and make sure that they are creating great experience for the talent that we place in the company. And then I would say, looking at in terms of what we use to measure the success, it's interesting because like obviously revenue, profit, we track sales and marketing metrics for all of them. CS, like back end, I would say, oh, there you go. the LTV of customers. Right. And so just looking at referral metrics, you know, lifetime value, like all that to me just tells you how sticky is their revenue. And how likely is it that they're going to have the same revenue this month that they did last month? Which some of them have amazing metrics and some of them, they're just younger and less mature in that area. Companies tend to master sales and marketing and then say, oh yeah, we got to make sure, you know. And, you know, when we come in, we're like, no, you could do much less sales and marketing, be much more efficient if you, you know, paid attention to these things on the back end. And I think that's just probably by the nature of our content. Some of the companies that have been attracted to us, more sales and marketing heavy, just because like Alex, that's what he talks about more.
Yeah.
I would say it's interesting because it's a holistic measurement. I think that also, you know, one that's really interesting for me that's probably is we have the CEOs rate themselves each quarter.
Okay. And what does that rating system look like?
I actually took a similar one to what I would have my executives rate themselves.
Okay.
And then combined it with like a few ones from that I've seen like boards use for rating CEOs. And basically there's a values portion and then there's a like hard was your job, how did you line up metrics, et cetera. And the best companies rate themselves worse, the founders and the CEOs. And the worst companies...
Oh, they think that they underperformed, but they did better.
Yeah.
So they're just really hard on themselves.
Yes. And then the worst companies overrate themselves.
Right.
And so that to me is very fascinating. And so when we first bring someone on based on how they rate themselves tells me a lot, because I do think that the best founders, they're not up their own ass. You know what I mean? Like yeah. they always think that they have places to improve, and if anything, they're probably a little too hard on themselves.
For sure. And so, you know, across all the companies, across all the hires that you have, there's obviously a bunch of sticky situations. You know, you talk a lot about, you know, praise over punishment, but I'm curious, like, how does that intersect? Like when someone's just not doing well, you know, and they've set out some goals and they're not tracking towards it, and it's not the first quarter this happened, maybe they're on their second now and it's kind of a last chance. Like, how are you dealing with the accountability around that? And then, you know, how does that fit into the frame of like pursuing praise versus punishment?
Yeah. So I think that there's a difference between punishment and consequences.
Okay.
If somebody doesn't do their job, they will eventually be fired.
Right.
That's a consequence of not doing your job. Versus if I wanted to punish this person, I would yell at them, threaten them. Mm. I would purposely try to make them feel bad. And I consider punishment to be much more purposely trying to make someone feel bad. For example, I like to, like we always say, like state the facts, like this happened. I color it with none of my opinion. Like last quarter, we only met 50% to quota. What do you think of that? And like legitimately, that is what I do with all of the situations right now, with my own team, with the portfolio companies. I state the facts of what happened and I first ask them what they think. Yep. Because honestly, I can't even think of a time in the last 6 months that somebody hasn't said what I already was thinking. And now I don't have to say anything that feels punishing to them. They bring up to me what they think happened and where they went wrong. And then I get to be the one that helps them.
Right.
I hear you. You know what? Maybe we could do this. And it becomes a collaboration and it feels much more like a team effort rather than me coming down upon them. So it's similar to like, I think how a marriage works, which is like, if your spouse does something that is adverse to the relationship, you know, me and Alex are just like, well, what do you think of that? And we'll be like, well, I think I was being an idiot. And actually this and that. And it's like, okay, cool. Is there anything I can do to help so that next time we do it this way instead? So it's like you become a positive because you get to help. You become the hand that pulls them up rather than like the one that's swatting them down.
Yeah.
And so I think that that's my approach to most all situations. Now, in most times when a company is not performing how we thought they were going to, we would like them to, et cetera. It's a conversation. How do you think this is going? What do you think we could be doing better, et cetera? And then we allow them, you know, when we are trying to give feedback because there are places where it makes sense, then it's not what are you doing wrong? It's what we want to do differently moving forward. Yep. So I think it's just a different frame because if you tell someone what they're doing wrong, you give them no direction. You just make them feel bad. But if you tell them what you would like them to do differently moving forward, they can visualize what they need to go do now. And so I always say like, do you want to make someone feel bad or do you want them to do something differently?
Right.
Very different objectives. And it's kind of like when you watch bosses give advice to people and you hear them say like, well, you're just really mean to your coworkers. So just like stop being mean. Okay. Like what the f*** am I going to do with that? Mm-hmm. You know, like how helpful is that advice? You know, there's no direction. You just know that you did something bad. You feel bad now. You don't like your boss. And how do you stop being mean? You know what I mean? People get very vague. Like it just, there's nothing someone can do.
Yeah, there's nothing tangible about it.
There's nothing tangible. And so with our companies, I strive really hard to just, what can we do differently going forward? And they often are incredibly receptive to that. And I think most of the times, like people are already so much harder on themselves than anybody else could be on them, that any amount of telling someone that they did something badly or wrong, they already know. You know, there's nobody that's gotten through our vetting process that wouldn't already know, you know, and then the one person that maybe that's happened, we're not with them anymore. So,
you know, I think that's one of the more underrated traits too, as a leader, is like just being curious, you know, versus going to people and being, yeah, put in that position where, you know, you have some feedback and it's just constantly you kind of raining down on people.
Yeah.
It's like, just bring up the facts, like you're saying, and kind of then switch it around just to being curious about what they think about the situation and what we can do next time. So you're both kind of opening up a conversation around it versus it being a one way.
It's
and then
so
talking
true.
About like a future orientation versus like just talking about past stuff. What are we going to do now? This shit has happened. Let's lay the facts on the table and let's just problem solve together as a squad and move forward here.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with that. I think it's always choosing curiosity over judgment. And it's funny, you know, our portfolio operating partner, he's the person who like manages the portfolio companies, like first, like in command. That's the one thing that it's funny. Everyone says they like, every time I talk to him, I leave feeling better than I was before.
Yeah.
It's because he's so good at just asking questions with this tone of curiosity and never accusing anybody of anything.
Nice.
Yeah.